This is the Primal Fire Podcast with your host, Jason the Argonaut.
I didn't know it at the time, but Christmas Day 2012 turned out to be one of the most important days of my life. Let me explain. We celebrated the holiday at my parents' house with some extended family. As usual, at some point, my mother said, "Let's take a cousin's picture." So my cousins and I and our significant others gathered around in her living room to take the annual photo. We took it, then ate dinner and opened presents, and I didn't think anything more of it. That is until my mother posted it on Facebook. I saw it pop up on Facebook that night, and I was horrified by what I saw. My face was bloated, my stomach was sticking out. In fact, my daughter was resting on my protruding stomach. Despite wearing what I thought was a good outfit, I just didn't look well. In fact, I looked like what so many American men look like now. I was overweight and just not healthy looking. I was 35 years old, but I was fat and tired looking. That night, I told myself this was going to change. I was a high school football player and proud of the shape I was in. Throughout the years, my weight fluctuated, and although I can't say I was ever obese, and I did hide my stomach well by sucking in, I knew what was underneath the shirts I was wearing. This photo showed me that what I knew was there was now starting to become more obvious. The following week, I was starting Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to get myself into shape and learn some discipline. At the time, I had very few, if any, close male friends. I was tired all the time, lazy, not doing much of anything physical. I worked all the time, drank alcohol on occasion to relax, watched too much TV, ate like shit. I sometimes half-heartedly started up at the gym, but I did chest and tri-day almost every time. I started jiu-jitsu and it was hard, but I loved it. Within the first 2 months, I had lumps in both ears. That's right, cauliflower ear, which I had to get drained. While cauliflower ear looks badass on a professional fighter, it wasn't a good look for a rapidly approaching middle-aged out-of-shape white belt. I continued going to jiu-jitsu sometimes 5 times a week. I loved it. I loved the competition and the daily sparring, which is called rolling. It was like a human chess match, and a magical thing started happening. Not only was I getting better, but I started losing weight, a lot of it. When I started, I was around 210 with high body fat and little muscle. A year after I started, I was 155, still with little muscle, but no longer fat. 2013 was the most difficult year of my life professionally since I was running two important political campaigns, but my jiu-jitsu kept me grounded. Christmas Day 2012 was the start of a self-improvement journey that led me to a new body, new confidence, entrepreneurship, and improved relationship with my wife, the balls to quit a high-paying job that I was comfortable in, and total changes to my mindset that have improved every aspect of my life. It started me down a path where I was finally able to let go of needing the validation or approval of others. If cutting through the bullshit and making improvements to myself is possible, I believe it's possible for all other men. So that was the write-up from my guest today, who is a friend and brother of mine. He runs the blog, thestrongmale.com, has a lot of great writing up there. He's also one of the brothers in the fraternity Fraternity of Excellence, and I'm going to let him introduce himself because, as always, my guests can introduce themselves better than me. But first, a word from not our sponsor. Today's Primal Fire podcast is totally not sponsored by Guinness Beer. However, you should drink it just the same. Drink deep, drink cold, and drink darkly, you heathens. With that out the way, Chris, welcome to the podcast, my man.
Thank you for having me, Jason. You didn't tell me about the Guinness. I would have had my own. I just have water here. So.
Right. Yeah, I'm having a couple. I'm not getting too crazy today, so I'm trying to keep the drinking down to a minimum for a little while. I've known you for a little while, but I didn't know until you sent me the write-up, which I almost butchered the hell out of, because I'm trying to get it together today. But I didn't know that you trained in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Are you still doing that?
No, I stopped. So when I was 155 pounds, like I said, with little muscle, I was getting dominated by guys a little bit. Like, it became bad. I was light and, you know, just not strong. So I started CrossFit. I know guys make fun of it and, you know, whatever. But it changed my life, really. It's another thing that changed my life. But we'll get into that. And I couldn't afford both of them at the same time. And CrossFit had classes at 6 a.m., 5 a.m., and it just worked. So I stopped doing jiu-jitsu. I want to again. My kids do it now. And when I go watch them, it becomes, you know, I want to be back out there, but yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really great for kids. And the cool thing about it is they because I've trained it myself, and they tell you, well, it's, you know, it's all about leverage. Well, guess what? You're not going to stop a big, strong guy from using both leverage and his strength, and you will get dominated. I mean, you ask any Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner, you think you're cute till you roll with a strong guy. And, you know, a white belt strong guy is going to eventually wrap up a purple belt. That's just how it works. And I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen a million times. I've also seen tiny women wrap up bigger guys. You know, a lot of times that comes from not wanting to hurt the girl. But I promise you, you're not going to hurt the girl. She's going to hurt you. She's trying not to hurt you. You know, I've been wrapped up myself by them. I mean, it's an amazing art. And I can understand how, you know, getting out there and seeing that and seeing it through your kids and everything, kind of living vicariously through them right now. But I've seen it change a lot of lives, man. Martial arts in general, not just jiu-jitsu, but martial arts in general. But I understand where you're coming from, because I was one of those guys that shat on CrossFit, and I've been doing a lot of Metcons lately. I really enjoy them.
Yeah, so I stopped doing it. I'm doing mostly bodybuilding style workouts right now. I did it for 5 or 6 years. It just wasn't fun anymore. My body felt beat up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I wanted a certain look, and you don't get it from that. So I, now I work out with my headphones in at LA Fitness. I'm happy. I'm by myself. no one bothers me. So it's, you adapt. I mean, the important thing when you work out and is to adapt. There's no one style that's best for everyone. Like you said, people shit on CrossFit. Sure. But it also gets a lot of people into it because of the community aspect of it. You know, and it's fun for a lot of people. They go into a regular gym, they don't know what to do. Unless they hire someone like you, hire somebody like me, you know, they go in, they don't know what to do. And they're intimidated. In the CrossFit gym, it's just a friendly atmosphere, and you're competing against yourself, which the competition part is really cool for ex-athletes like me. So it's, it served its purpose for me when it, and it became a business for me. I ended up owning a gym, a CrossFit gym. And I met some of my best friends through it. So it's, I'll never say anything bad about it. It's just not for me anymore.
Right. Yeah. Cause you're pretty jacked. So,
thank you. I try.
Like you're pretty much the Italian stallion. So, you were telling me the other day that you still train. You got a pretty high level client right now.
I have a gentleman who is a real estate developer who I go to his house 3 times a week to train in his house. It's great. I love working with people like that. He's motivated. He's self-motivated. He's got a full gym in his basement. I try to keep it fun for him. And I hope that goes on as long as possible. He's worth me waking up at 4:30 in the morning 3 times a week to go do it. So, I'm really, really selective. If I'm going to train people right now, I want it to be long-term, mm-hmm. because there's nothing better than training a person on a long-term basis, right? You see them progress. Every time he does squats, I tell him, like, remember the first day? Remember how bad it was? Now look at you, So I want a continuity if I'm going to do it. I don't want to waste my time for a month with somebody who's just going to leave and not take it seriously. So I'm selective. And I've turned people down who've asked, 2 people actually, because I just didn't feel right, so.
Yeah, we turn people down at Training Grounds all the time. That's the gym where I work in Alpharetta. And people come in, they want a deal. And it's like, the way we do things, first month is $99 and you get to try everything. It's $500 value. And they want to talk, they want a deal on that. It's like, that's the fucking deal. Right. It's $99 for a month of basically unlimited training. We do a lot of team training. You get 8 personal training sessions. You can train with us as much as you want in team. You get to do spin. You get to do. We have a thing called cross grind. So our head coach has a CrossFit background. So we have a thing called cross grind. Basically, what cross grind is Metcon for regular people. Right. We don't go in there. You're not going in there doing 1,000 reps of power cleans and stuff like that. You may be doing 1,000 reps of wall balls.
Right.
But it's. I mean, we got 70-year-old people doing that.
Yeah.
So it's really good to get in there and to build their agility and their explosiveness and their balance and things like that. And that's one of the things that I really like about CrossFit and about the whole cross grind concept. But, we turn people away all the time. We're not a sales gym. We don't want your money. We want your dedication. We got people that have been there for 8 years,
Exactly. Don't get me started on the gym industry because, well, I guess I will since I just opened the door. So we opened, me and two buddies of mine opened a CrossFit gym on Staten Island, New York, where I live, in 2016. We opened the end of 2016, and we sold it in July of 2019 for a good profit, actually, and still running right now. It wore me down, the business. Let me tell you, like, babysitting people who, you know, like, you're trying to get fit, like, we're trying to help you, and then lying to you, like, so we give meal plans and all that stuff, and, you know, and so they come to you and say, hey, I didn't lose the weight, like you said. Like, okay, so have you been following your meal plan? Yes. Oh, cool. All right. So you drink, but I still drink wine. I still drink wine every single night with dinner. Is that on your meal plan? No. And then they blame us. Like, it works, you know, right. And we had some really good success stories, but if you want it to work, you know, it got to a point where I was babysitting people, adults, and it's just not fun, you know?
Yeah. It got to the point with me where I had to get so extreme that it almost sounds like sarcasm, but I'm being dead serious. It's like, if you put a piece of cake in your mouth, don't blame my program, blame yourself. Exactly. If you train for 6 months, and during that 6 months, you have but one sip of soda in that 6 months, don't blame me. Don't blame my program. Blame yourself. If you're going to do it, you have to go gorilla, especially with clinically obese people. You're going to eat meat and you're going to eat vegetables and you're not going to do anything else. I've seen it literally cure type 2 diabetes. It works. Stick to the plan, but they won't do it. And then some of them will just, I got one lady, oh my God, bless her heart. She's like, I just can't get enough protein eating one meal a day. Then don't eat one fucking meal a day. Eat five. Well, I'm scared that I'm going to gain weight if I eat more. Well, how's the one meal working out for you?
Yeah.
You haven't changed in 7 years. Stop.
I have a funny story about a young lady like that who must have weighed 95 pounds when she started, skinny. She quit a few months later. I'm like, why? What happened? You love it. You're doing really well. Well, I went on the scale and I weighed 103 pounds. I was 95 pounds. Like, okay, you probably look better now, you know. and that type of stuff I have zero patience for. And it just got to be, just a grind, you know, like trying to deal with people, developing relationships with people. And, you know, the way I do things is I go with my heart. So, like, you become friendly with people. And then you realize at a certain point it's a business relationship to them. Whereas for me, it was like, they were making progress. They were doing well. It was more than a business relationship. I thought we were friends, but they'll just put a hold on their credit card and like ghost you and they're gone, you know?
Yeah.
And that just became like, you know, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. So what else do you do for work?
So, I'm a lawyer by training. I went to law school. I've never really practiced law. After law school, I worked in a court for about a year first, a clerk for a judge, which a lot of people do after law school. And then I answered a job ad for a local politician here, elected official. And in my head, it was going to be a couple years maybe. And I ended up staying with him from 2004 to 2018. So politics was my game. I was not practicing law, writing laws on the other end. And by the end, I was managing all the social media for it because communication is a big part of what an elected official does. So I'm currently working for another elected official locally here, managing the social media, writing everything for him, most stuff. And, you know, politics I love. The government part I love. When we think of government or politics, we think of Washington, D.C., where it's all about fighting. Everybody fights each other. Everybody hates each other.
Yes.
Local politics is much different. Here, it's about picking up garbage. It's about potholes. It's about quality of life. And people get along. You know, people get along. Republicans here in New York City, there's not a lot of them. So we have to get along with the other side or else we get nothing done. So it's, you know, it's good. I couldn't work in Washington and the federal, you know, because I couldn't deal with the fighting and, you know.
Yeah, we were talking about it at work today because I'm not a political person. I mean, I'll tell a joke with the best of them every now and then because it's funny. But we were talking about it today, how just out of control literally everyone is regarding that. And there was a certain, it's been hammered to death. The horse is dead and they keep on kicking it. And a certain author who is still on that bandwagon tweeted something this morning. You ever notice that Have you noticed that Trump's current coronavirus crew is all old, male, and white?
Stephen King actually tweeted that.
Yeah, I'll let you say it. And the thing about it was, one, if you're going to perpetuate a narrative, make sure it's true. Because we have pictures. We have pictures, we have video, we have everything to prove that they're not all, in fact, white and male. Second of all, you're old, male, and white. And nobody, you're not impressing black people. You're not impressing women. You're not impressing black women. It's pandering, and it's pathetic. It's the most pathetic thing in the world. And I'm not saying there aren't conservatives who act stupid. Everybody's acting stupid. That's why I just don't want anything to do with it. And I get up there, and I log in, and I see this, and I'm like, that's the best you came up with, you know? And you got a lot of people who are practicing politics with that same mentality. That's their same mentality, hissy fits and temper tantrums, you know? So did a lot of that have something to do with you getting out of it?
No, so... So the person I worked for originally from 2004 to 2018, he started off as a city council member, and then he ran for borough president of Staten Island, which it's like the mayor of Staten Island. We're one of the boroughs of New York City, so it's not exactly a mayor, but it's the chief executive.
Okay.
Look, it was time for a change. I had worked at the same place for the same person for a long time. It became like a big brother, little brother relationship after a while. You know, I started when I was in my mid-20s. And the gym was doing really well at the time. Like, really well at the time. And it just made sense, you know, for me. He just won re-election, so it was just the right time for me to go. You know, and then I started working for the other guy who I've known for a long time. And doing similar stuff, but it's just a different environment. It's just a change of pace. So I just needed to change, you know.
Right. So you don't own the gym anymore, right?
Right. I'm out of the gym business.
Okay.
Totally.
I don't blame you. So, are you trying to pick up some more clients? Are you pretty good with that?
Yeah, I would do one or two more. But again, I want to be very selective. I'd prefer to do it in their house if I can. It's hard to find clients like that who have the resources and all that, and will pay me what I think I'm worth.
I'm the opposite of you. I do not make house calls. I hate it.
Yeah.
And I guess because I had so many other jobs where I made house calls. I was a gardener. I mean, I was all kinds of stuff. Man, I've done everything, except like a spy that you know of that you know of. But I don't do that. I would rather just pay, like in my gym, if I bring them in. My gym is very generous. It's 70-30 split. So 70 to the trainer and 30 to the gym.
Right.
Very, very few gyms, especially in Atlanta, do that. And so if I bring, I would rather just pay the overhead, pay the rent, as it were.
Right.
And just train them there. I don't have to carry anything. I don't have to worry about them. I don't have to show up and they overslept. I don't have to worry about any of that kind of stuff. So I mean,
yeah, I don't bring anything. It's all there already. And look, with this particular client, it's he's become a mentor to me, sort of. Like, you know, it's been almost a year that I've been going to his house. And, you know, he's a successful businessman who, you know, knows a lot. And, you know, we talk. I mean, what do you do when you're with a client, when you're alone? You know, he's doing what he's doing and we're talking, you know. So he does. I don't know if he's going to listen to this. Probably not. But he doesn't realize, like, I'm picking his brain about a whole host of topics on business, on life. Mm-hmm. And he's taught me maybe more than I've taught him. I look at it that way, you know.
Well, it's a pretty good trade, and it's good that he understands the value of it. And he's probably the type of guy that even if he wasn't, you know, as wealthy as he is, he'd probably still find a way to pay the same amount because you can tell people that. I used to work at LA Fitness, and a lot of clients were just there because they had the money. What do I do with this money? I got to do something with it. I'll get a personal trainer, and then I won't show up, and I'll get charged the $65 for not showing up, and I really don't give a shit because I'm hungover.
Yeah.
You know, because I went to a party last night with high level people and I don't need to go train today, you know, whatever.
Right.
But that's a really good situation to have. And because you said you had your partner handles the nutrition for him, right?
Yeah. My old business partner from the gym, he has his nutrition business. So he does that part.
Yeah.
So that's a good deal. You know, it's a good deal.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about something extremely controversial. Probably more controversial than politics. So you married your high school sweetheart, right?
Yeah, we met when I was right after I graduated high school. So the summer after I graduated, she was still in high school though, because she's 2 years younger than me. So
okay. And now for the most controversial topic that pisses a lot of people off, and by a lot of people I mean, she's a stay-at-home mom.
Yes, she is.
Everybody who heard this, I don't know who I'm talking to, but everybody out there who heard this, his wife is a stay-at-home mom and has been for how long?
Since 2010, pretty much. So 10 years.
God, you patriarch. You patriarch. You evil, tyrannical, Führer husband, you.
Here's the thing. So I would never try to tell any other families how to operate their lives. You know, I have some friends whose wives work, do really well, are really successful. They're happy the way that they are, and God bless them. For us, I personally think that no one raises our kids better than she does. There's a maternal instinct that, I'm not going to say all women, because I don't think all women have it, but most women have this maternal instinct that's just way above what we have. Like, we have to develop it as men. And I'll tell a funny story on when it becomes most prevalent for me. So there's been some nights when one of my kids was throwing up, right? So they wake up in the middle of the night and they're throwing up. On those nights, you'll see me like running around like a chicken without a head. What do I do? I don't know what to do. And she becomes like a drill sergeant at that point. You know, run downstairs, get me the paper towels, get this. Like, she's like barking out orders, cool and calm as we could be. And I'm freaking out. That's the maternal instinct that I think, you know, a lot of women have. Yeah. So no one can raise our kids better than she can. And she loves it. And she doesn't feel the need to be reporting to a boss, or, you know, having to wake up at 4:30 to answer emails, or, you know, any of that stuff. And it's the hardest job in the world. And you know, she'll catch shit from it from some people still, you know, who, a lot of them are jealous, I think, a lot of the women who will, you know, because they want to be in that situation. Yeah. Oh, so yeah. There's a bit of jealousy to it. But, you know, stay-at-home moms are picked on by a lot of people, and they're shamed by a lot of women, I think. And I don't think it's right. And look, it doesn't mean she's never going to go back to work. Mm-hmm. You know, my youngest kids are 10 and 5 right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, could it be this way a little bit while longer? Probably. If she wants to go to work, she has a freedom. I don't tell her what to do, right? Like that, you know, so she has the freedom to do it. We would figure it out on how we would manage her be working and her working. But for us right now, it works the best. And again, I'm not telling anybody what to do. If that doesn't work for you, don't do it. But if there's a way you can make it happen, you know, give it a chance. And personally, we probably make less money this way. You know, if she was working, she would bring in more money. But for me right now, money isn't the most important thing. It's keeping the family together. It's our freedom that we, you know, that we have. So, you know, if you don't like it, I don't care.
Yeah, of course not. Yeah. And you have 3 kids, right?
I have 3 kids. Yeah. So So my oldest is 23 years old. So you could do the math. I'm 42. So like you said, we met after I graduated high school the summer in August. We met. It was intense when we first met. We were partying a lot. We were New York City ravers back in the mid 90s, which was an interesting time. It was illegal parties and warehouses and stuff like that. You know. Kids today, I go to festivals at like legal locations. Right. Don't know what it's like because it was totally
right.
So we were heavily into that stuff, and so it was an intense time. And in October, she was pregnant. She was 16. I was 18, right? Yeah, I was 18.
It was a hell of a rape, man.
Yeah.
we didn't have rapes like that here.
Yeah. So we so my daughter was born July 4th, 1996. I was about a month before my 19th birthday, and she was 17. So we waited a long time before we had our second, 14 years, who's now 10. And then Noah, my son, is 5. Okay. So my daughter's 23, my oldest.
Okay, so you have 2 boys and 1 girl, or 2 girls
and
1
boy? Two girls and 1 boy.
Okay, yeah. I think I had seen a picture you posted the other day of your boy. He had like spiky hair, kind of. He's gonna be a heartbreaker, man.
Yeah, he's much better looking than I am. So
he that's a good looking kid, man. Yeah, but you're like, you showed me the picture, because I mean, all your kids are beautiful. I think I've only seen the 23-year-old and the little boy, okay. But Yeah, I'll make some pretty babies. Thanks. You know, as you said, it's all your wife. It's all
her. Yes. Yeah. Good. Nothing. I'm happy. I'm happy for that.
You're happy. Yeah. Yeah. So, what are, other than running around the house, you know, when people are throwing up like a chicken with your head cut off, what are some other challenges you find with fatherhood, especially having children so young?
So it was hard. You know, I'm not going to bullshit or lie or anything like that. It was hard for both of us. So after my daughter was born, we sort of split time between my wife's, we weren't married yet, but my wife's family's house in Brooklyn and my parents' house in Staten Island, which, if you don't know the geography, it's separated by the Verrazano Bridge. It's like a different world, the two places. So we split our time. Eventually, it ended up we were mostly at my parents' house. My parents' the house was bigger, and there was room for us and stuff. So I went to school. I was in college at the time. Patty was home with my daughter basically all the time. She didn't have a car yet because in Brooklyn they had subway. They didn't need a car. So like for where I grew up, as soon as we turned whatever the age was, we all got cars. So she was home a lot. Then I went to law school and she was still home with my daughter. So I didn't realize at the time, which I realize now, she was very isolated. Like she, you know, I was the one out there doing stuff, going on class trips to Washington, D.C. in college and stuff like that. And she was home all of the time. I wasn't cognizant of that. I was young and immature. But, you know, that was a source of some tension for us and, you know, some resentment that she had for a while that we've worked through. But, you know, because I was just not, you know, not even paying attention to it. I was doing my own thing.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that you said that because I read something the other day. I can't remember where it was. But I think it was somebody in the manosphere. I hate that word, but women mature at 18 and then they stop. And men don't mature until they're 40. So, yeah. And that's not bashing women, because some women, the women that I have known personally are the same in their 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever, as they were when they were 18 years old. So some of them are immature. So they tell me, here's the deal with me. I'm letting a hell of a cat out of the bag here. I prefer younger women, you know, drinking age, hopefully. But I prefer younger women. Like I have this kind of joke where it's, well, how old do you prefer your women between 29 and 30? And I never tell them if I'm joking or not, you know, but you're like, what's wrong with you? There's nothing wrong with me. I'm not going to start. If I do decide to have kids and do decide to start a family, I'm not going to have it with a 40-year-old woman. That's a health risk. It's a health risk for her. It's a health risk for the baby. And I don't want to go down that road. But I've noticed that, like I said, you know, it's going to be difficult. Like you said, you weren't cognizant of any of this kind of stuff because you're 19 and you don't know. Like you're 35 and you're still not quite mature. You're still not cognizant of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had read that about the women maturing and the men maturing at a certain time last year. And lo and behold, I didn't get my shit together until I turned 40 this year, or just last year. So this is 2020. So 2019. I didn't get my shit together when I was 40, and everything changed when I was 40. I'm like, wow, man, this is the things that I was not cognizant of before, I am now. And a lot of, like, my best friend growing up was female, as odd as that was. We were just, we both were into each other. We were just too scared to say anything. But her is a prime example. She is exactly the same right now at 40 as she was at 18. So people tell me, well, you need to date older. Well, it doesn't matter, because the last girl I was involved with was 39 and she was batshit crazy. Completely. I mean, she had more red flags than a communist nation, man. She was completely out of her mind. So I think that's another thing with you is you got together with one of those girls who matured well. She matured early and she matured well. And maybe having a child early help that along a little bit.
She just knew what to do right from the beginning. And it's amazing. It goes back to that maternal instinct that I was talking about. It just turned on. She was doing babysitting, you know, when we met. So she'd been with kids before. For me, like, it was like
holding a baby. Right. Like, yeah, I'm gonna drop this child.
It's like a giant potato.
Yeah. So for me, it took much longer. And look, I'll admit, and I'll say, and I've said this to her, to my daughter. You know, she didn't get the best of me, like my youngest kids do. You know, my youngest kids get the mature me, who is, you know, all about them and improving their lives and, you know, and improving my own life and, you know, improving myself to be the best I can be. My older daughter didn't get the best of me. And, you know, when I was still finding myself, trying to figure life out and trying to figure out who I am. And look, you know, I'll be honest. And I've said this to her anyway. You know, there was some resentment there that, of course, she didn't deserve. Like, you know, my friends from high school were going to Cancun in the summer, you know, partying. And I was home, right? And I was home with the child and a soon-to-be wife, you know. And growing up, you know, that was hard at times for me, you know, because I was the party. In high school, that's all I did was party. You know, so with that said, you know, she saved me in a lot of ways because I don't think I was going down a good path, you know, and who knows where it could have ended up. So without her grounding us and, like, you know, making us realize what's important, who knows where I'd be right now. So, yeah. But, you know, I've spoken to her. I've said, you didn't get the best of me. And I've apologized because, you know, of course she said I didn't do anything wrong and she made me cry. And, you know, that's just the way it is. But, I did the best I could at the time. I'm actually working on, and if I get quarantined or I can't leave my house for a few weeks, it would actually be helpful because I get a lot written. Yeah. I'm actually working on what I hope to be a book or an ebook or something I want to release. Actually, it's a small memoir about this time when I met my wife and my daughter. Yeah. And it's just advice to young fathers or young soon-to-be fathers. I wrote a piece on my blog. I teased it. It was like 1,500 words, but I'm going to expand that into, you know, basically a letter to young soon-to-be fathers, just so they don't make the same mistakes I made, and, you know, so they see the big picture and how important they actually are. So if I end up with that, it's going to be about 25,000 words. I'm about 10,000 words in right now, so hopefully.
Well, I mean, everything happens for a reason, so, you know, I think that's a book that's sorely needed, because there's a lot of them, man, and like you said, there's a lot of things. You got 19-year-old guys having kids, man. They don't know what the hell to do. They're going to be, especially today. I mean, because the further we get, the stupider people get. And it's not an insult to them. It's just the guys are stupid. We use half of our brain. Women get to use both sides of their brain. We use half of our brain, and half the time we use half of that. You know, and it's just, we think with our dicks. And that's something else that we get bashed about, but that's just how it is. And that's one of the things that guys like you, it's good that guys like you exist, because that's what they need, man. They need a father figure. They need a voice. They need a voice from a guy who, you know, it could have been considered a mistake, but it wasn't a mistake. It wasn't a mistake at all. I mean, there's no regret to be had. You know, you sat down and talked to her about it. She doesn't blame you for it. That's the best thing in the world. You didn't ruin her life. She didn't ruin yours. Nobody ruined anything. And it doesn't have to be that way. And a lot of times with these guys, what they need to hear is stick around. Just stick around. Take responsibility. Own up to what you did. It takes two people to make a baby, even though a lot of people don't agree with that. But we won't get into that. So it's just these guys that get out there and make stupid decisions, man. If you end up, when you make a stupid decision, you got to be around, but you got to know how to be around.
Yeah, I would advise guys that I'm going to, you know, in this piece that I'm writing, you don't necessarily even have to stay with the woman. Like, if it's not the right person for you, you should not stay with her.
Yeah.
Because that will make it worse. My wife Patty and I just connected right from the beginning. You know, it's hard to explain. We actually talked about this the other day. We bring up weird topics sometimes just to connect and talk. And she actually asked me, the question was, did you fall in love with me or grow to love me? Which is like a weird, like, question. Like, you know,
that's what they do. That's what they all in your head. That's that two sides of brain shit going on.
Yeah. Well, she texted it to me, and I guess I'm trying to think it through. And, like, my answer was, and, you know, and this might not be popular to some guys in Manosphere and Red Pill, you know, whatever. I don't care. Look, the first night we met, I just knew something, like, she's different. I can't explain what it is, but like, yeah, she just like, it's so hard to, I don't know what the word to even how to put into words, but there was just something that drew me to her, you know, right from the first night. So my answer was, I fell, like, I didn't think I had a choice, you know? And then obviously as time went on, we got to actually know each other and we kept choosing to be with each other. You know, that's, you know, it grew, but yeah, something that night happened and I don't know what it was, but, we've been together since, and it's, she gets questioned a lot. So when people realize that we have a 23-year-old and a 5-year-old, they'll whisper to her sometimes, the same father, you know, because we're weird. It's a weird situation. Right. Usually it would be like a second marriage, you know, where now you have kids and that's why they're younger. And she'll say, yes, the same father, you know. So I realized that we're weird and an aberration a little bit. And these things don't work out a lot of times. And, you know, and look, I'm not going to lie and say it's always been easy because it hasn't. But it's worked and it's better now after 25 years than it was ever, you know?
Yeah, that's always, I mean, it's really when it does work out, because you guys are double outliers, man. I mean, basically high school sweethearts, even though you met after. Yeah. So it was close there. And then also her being a single mom and staying home with the kids. And it's just a huge thing, man. It's wonderful when, yeah, that kind of scenario, because when I was growing up, you know, my dad told my mother, he said, you do not have to work. I don't want you working. And it wasn't a tyrannical thing. It was just, you don't have to work. Don't worry about it. My dad was a treasurer for the telephone company and he was a general contractor. Yeah. So he had the wealth. He was like, no, just stay here, take care of the kid. Everything's cool. Because I was planned. So my mom didn't have me since she was 29, which was even back in 1979, it's still old to have a kid. And my dad, I think, was 35. But he told her, man, you just stay home. I'll take care of all this. And that's what he did. He went to work. He provided for the family. Mom stayed home with me. We went and did stuff. We can go to the zoo. We can go to, you know, wherever we wanted to go. And it's just a really cool situation when, if you can have it to work.
Yeah. The important thing for guys who want to get married is, in my opinion, is you got to find a girl that shares your values. Because if you don't, and Patty and I share the same values almost 100%. Because if you don't, there's going to be conflict. There's going to be conflict over, you know, a whole bunch of things if you don't share the same values.
Right.
So now we didn't have that discussion. I didn't, you know, back when I was 19, I wasn't analyzing. I didn't know what my values were at the time. So
still learning how to walk.
Yeah. But, it's, you know, at this point I realized, like, yeah, we share the same values. We agree on almost everything. And I'll show her stuff from Twitter sometimes, some of the controversial stuff. What do you think about this? And 9 times out of 10, she agrees with it. So, you know, but that's important for guys, you know, because if you don't have that discussion beforehand, you might go into it and you might want the stay-at-home mom and they might want to be the CEO of a major corporation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's an issue there. You might want 3 kids. You might not want any kids. And, you know, you have to have the same, be on the same page, because it's not going to work if you don't.
Yeah, absolutely. Your oldest, is she in college?
No, she's actually married. Okay. She's married. Yeah, she's in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So she did college for a little while, but
it wasn't for her. It wasn't for me.
She might go back. Yeah. You know, yeah. I don't think college is necessary for everyone. I think actually it hurts a lot of people because you're wasting time when you could be actually developing real skills and racking up student loans. So
right.
I'm not going to be one of these people that advises my kids to automatically go to college as, you know, thinking that that's going to be your way to be successful. Because graduating with a women's studies degree, you know, with $150,000 in debt is not, you know, there's not good prospects there. So,
not at all. So how long have you been in Fraternity of Excellence?
So I joined about initially last December of 2018. And I was only in for a month at the time. And then I left because I never got involved, never did anything. And then I was busy at the time and I just let it, you know, just quit it at the time. I came back in October. So I've been in since October to now.
Okay. What led you to it to actually get actively involved?
Yeah. So Hunter's writings, and I've been following a lot of the guys on Twitter for a while, you know, from this space, whatever you want to call it. Hunter's writings always appealed to me as a married man, as a father. He just got it, you know, he just seemed to get it. And, you know, it seemed like somebody that, you know, if he's running this thing, it's probably going to be guys similar to me. So, you know, I want to be talking to guys who are in similar situations to me. First of all, I want to be able to help guys who might be going through something that I've been through and could help with. And, you know, and I try to find, seek out wisdom from as many people as I can. And, you know, and I have done so in the Fraternity of Excellence a lot with a lot of guys on whatever topics. So,
right.
Yeah, it's just the right fit for me. It just works. And I'm involved, you know, in the Slack that we have, the chat, a lot. And, you know, I'm trying to connect with guys. I like to learn from people. And I don't care. A lot of people think, you know, you're 42, you're Hunter's 33. You're learning from somebody who's younger than you. Like, yeah, look, they might have more wisdom than me, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I wish when I was 33, I was more plugged into this stuff because life would have been easier at the time, you know?
That's why we listened to him. I mean, because I knew he was young. I thought he was late 30s. And I'm like, man, this guy's, you know, really got his shit together. And he's only 33 years old. Same thing. I think he and his wife were high school sweethearts as well.
Yeah, they were. That's what I'm saying. So, like, from his writings, I was on the email list. There was just a lot of overlap, and I just felt like this is probably the place for me. I went in October, and, you know, I just got plugged in. I do the Zoom calls a lot. I go on the Zoom calls and connect with guys face to face like this, and, you know, it works for me.
Yeah, I know that Adam Smith, Adam Lane Smith, as everybody knows him up there, his productivity soared. It went through the roof. Did you see something similar?
I don't know how that guy works and writes so much. And I tell him that
he's crazy. He's insane.
I wish I could write 10,000 words a day or whatever it is, produce book after book. But yeah, look, that stuff is impressive. That stuff is inspiring to me. When I see guys like Jeff Putnam publish books, you know, that shit's inspiring. It makes me say, look, I can do this too. You know, I have something to say.
Yeah.
And right now, whatever I'm writing, whatever I'm doing, I hope to be able to help guys. And I've gotten DMs from guys on Twitter saying thank you, which is really cool. Even if nobody reads what I'm writing, I'm going to continue doing it because I love doing it, because I, you know, I feel like I do have something to say. And, you know, whether it sucks or not, it's me. You know, I'm trying to be as real as possible. There's a tendency on social media to, especially on Instagram, I think, to put out the fake version of life, right? Mm-hmm. Make it look like everything is great. You're only posting when you go on vacation or doing really cool stuff. And that's not real life. And, you know, I'm trying to be as real as possible. So on Twitter, you'll see me posting, you know, I'll call myself out usually on stuff. Which is fine. You know, like, you know, I have nothing to hide. So, and I think people appreciate that when you're real, you know, because real people have real issues. We all are not driving Lamborghinis and making $1 million a day. And, you know, and that's okay. We can't all do that.
That's why I get up there a lot and tell people, you know what, it's a shit day. I gotta bounce for a little while. I'm not feeling it. You know, whatever, they gotta see. I'm transparent, so they gotta see that. They gotta see the imperfections you have. You're not. I'm not. I am the last guy to be giving anybody advice about how to be a man specifically, because I had to cultivate my own. I had to cultivate my own, and I didn't do it till later in life. My dad was around. I don't hate my father. My dad was around. My dad wasn't really a dad. He was more of a father. It was, when you come over this weekend, we're going to work. There's not a whole lot of play. And it didn't ruin me. It just, I just didn't have all the other stuff that went with it. It's my work ethic trumps everything else. And I'm grateful for that, you know, because I could have had no dad. And it's not like my dad wasn't a deadbeat. My dad wasn't, you know, all these, you know, awful thing. And he drank. He wasn't a drunk. He drank. He drank Schlitz. You can't really get drunk on Schlitz. It's like 2.3% alcohol. But that's what he believed in. And he told me when I was, you know, in 1989, he was like, son, you can't live on $20 an hour. I'm like, well, fuck, I don't even have $20. What do you mean I can't live on? I'm struggling. I'm thinking, this is 89. I'm thinking like $10 an hour. You're telling me I can't live on $20 an hour? Today, that means you can't live on $45 an hour.
Right.
So he told me that, and that's why I'm constantly, I used to think for the longest I had purpose chasing PTSD. Where it's like, I gotta make money, gotta make money, gotta find something to do, gotta make money, gotta make money. And in a way it's good, because I'm always chasing a purpose. I'm always chasing paper. Right. I'm not gonna let anybody, I tell people no. Can you give me that? No, I certainly can't. Because I have to feed me. I don't have a girlfriend. I don't have any kids. I don't know of. I got to feed me. So if you're either going to pay me or just go to Planet Fitness, man, it's $10 a month. Get the fuck out of my face. You know, that kind of thing. But, yeah, the whole work ethic thing, anything that your father can teach you, even if he taught you just one thing, is amazing. And I think all these guys in the fraternity, you know, their majority of them are fathers. I don't think all of them are fathers.
No, I mean, a lot of them are.
Yeah, but a lot of those guys, I mean, that's why they're doing it, because they want to be better men for their kids, you know, even if they have daughters. Because a lot of people don't understand this, that daughters need a strong father figure in their life. And to say this without it sounding strange, that's the kind of man they're going to choose, because daddy issues stemming from having a shitty father. That's where it right. comes. You don't have a good father figure and make shitty choices in boyfriends normally. Every girl that I ever dated was a train wreck and a shitty father. I can tell you that right now, because I met the father and he was a piece of shit.
Yeah.
He was either drunk or he just kind of did his own thing or whatever, you know? And I think that that's something that you understand and that you're doing for your kids.
Look, I'm trying. And there are so many shitty fathers out there who come home, drink too much, disappear into their man cave and, you know, watch football or something all day on their screens and don't pay attention. Right. I like the fraternity because we're trying to transcend that. We're trying to teach our kids strong values first. And, you know, if you look in the chat, what everybody's posting, it's about how to connect with their kids, how to teach their sons how to be a man. Like you said, how to teach their daughters what a man is, because they don't know. Because what kids are taught today in the media is not good and it's not helpful. And we have to counteract the messages that they learn there. And that's our job as parents to do. And when my son was born, I felt an extra responsibility, more responsibility than I did when my daughters were born. Just because I know he's going to be criticized, just because he's a boy, you know, and he's going to be told he's toxic. He's going to be told, sit down. Don't be rambunctious. Don't run around. You know, his nature is to be that way.
That's right.
You know, so when he goes to school, he has to sit quietly and still. And, you know, we don't want to do that. That's not how we're made. And I want to counteract that. I want to let him know that he has value and he, you know, and who he is okay to be. And I want him to grow up to be a good man. You know, I don't want him to make the same mistakes I did, you know. I want him to be a good man, because if he's not, he's going to screw up his family in the future, you know, and I don't want that to happen. So my son and I talk about manhood a lot, you know, in an age appropriate way. But, you know, he told me the other day, he can't wait to be the man of the house when he's, you know, when he has kids. And so, you know, I love hearing stuff like that, because you know, when he says that, he's thinking of me. So he's thinking something positive of me, and, you know. I'm trying to teach him little by little, and I think it's okay so far.
Yeah, and one of the good things, because he's doing jiu-jitsu, right?
He's so little, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's because boys, men, males, they crave violence, man. They crave it, and it's something that's why boys fight. And it's it was your article where you kicked your friend in the nuts, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what they do. And what we have to do is we have to do it in a controlled environment. And putting them in that environment, it lets it out. Because when you start to stifle that stuff, notice how if you let boys be boys, you have less problems than if you try to stifle their boyhood and their masculinity. Because it starts at an early age. It starts at about 3 years old. They start doing boy things and having boy stuff. They start grabbing their junk. Because it's there,
of course,
you know, and they might come out of the shower, wah, you know, whatever they do, because that's what boys do, man. Everything is centered down there, and that's where it comes from. It comes from, I mean, even before they hit puberty and the testosterone and the balls drop and all that kind of stuff, even before that, those boyish traits are still there, you know.
Absolutely, and if you have boys or girls, boys versus girls, you could see it. I mean, you see the difference. And my wife didn't believe me when I told her, you know, at the beginning, like, he's a boy. Sometimes let him fall. It's okay. He'll be okay.
That's right.
You know, he might get, you know, cry a little bit, but it's okay. He needs to learn how to, you know, how to deal with it.
That's right.
So anyone who says there's no natural differences just has to have daughters and sons and see the difference from a very early age on how they choose to play. And, you know, and we see it, and, you know,
yeah.
you know, I love having, we, you know, I body slam him right onto the bed behind me all the time. We wrestle and stuff like that. So that's always fun.
Yeah, that's what was fun about having. I had this uncle. He was like 6'3", like well over 200 pounds. And that's what he would do. Because uncles are great. Uncles are the other dads. Yeah. You know, and I had these, this is what he would do. Pick me up and just slam me on the couch. And I love it. Do it again. Ah!
Exactly.
It brings out that primal instinct, you know. But, yeah, I mean, those are the kind of things you got to do. And you just got to teach them that, you know, it's okay to feel this way. I remember when I was watching Vikings when Ivar, because Ivar was so, he was pitiful until he became, you know, what he was and started killing people. But Ivar told Ragnar, he said, I wish I wasn't so angry all the time. And Ragnar said, well, then you would be nothing.
Right.
And it just hit me. It hit me hard. I wish somebody would have told me that when I was 5. So I would get angry and I was bullied a lot. Things like that, because you have to be taught to channel that. And my mother and my dad both, they told me, somebody fucks with you, man, you just got to pop them out, you know. But a lot of times I was always scared. Sometimes I wasn't. I just really had to be pushed really far. Yeah. And I was that guy. You could push me until I got touched. I don't like to be touched. Yeah. And that's when I'd finally lash out.
Yeah. The jujitsu thing is, it was my wife's that's been pushing me for it. Because she doesn't want my kids to be bullied, you know, and she wants them to be confident enough to be able to, you know, not that they're going to go around taking people down and choking them out, but they have the ability to do so if they have to, you know. Yeah. So she was really the one that's like, finally, like, all right, he's 5 years old, let's get them in and let's do it, you know.
Yeah, that's the good thing about jiu-jitsu is that it teaches you to fuck somebody up without catching a court date.
Yes.
So, you know. I want to get to my favorite part.
Sure.
The organic answers, because you have no idea what I'm going to read.
No idea.
But you wrote it, so it's not like you're going to think too hard and struggle with it. So
I hope not. Sometimes I write in like a manic like state where I write really fast. I put it down for 10 minutes. I edit it really fast, and then I just post it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, these are they're kind of all over the place. So okay. I went deep into your blog and stuff. So so the first one is as follows. Men have to realize that perhaps the reason why they are not getting the sex they want, the true partnership they desire, and the deference to their leadership they expect is because their wife or long-term relationship simply doesn't respect them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if your wife doesn't respect you, she's not going to do what you want, right? I mean, if you come home and you don't talk to her, if you go right, like I said, to your man cave to drink your beer and your beer belly's hanging down and you're not leader, you know, you're not leading. If you know, there's a noise outside and she's the one that runs outside with the baseball bat or the gun.
Totally see your wife doing that.
Yeah, or the gun, depending on where you live. I live in New York City, so they don't like us to have to.
Right.
She's not going to respect you. That's not going to make her want you. And look, sex is important for a marriage. And anybody who tells you it's not doesn't know what they're talking about. Because without it, you're roommates or you're co-parents, and that's it. It's what separates it, you know, and you should have a healthy sex life. And if you make yourself a high value man, she's going to want you. I mean, I think that's just basic, you know, I don't think that's controversial in any way. You know, so this is all part of dating your wife too. I mean, we go out on dates all the time. We try to go out, overnights at least once a month, although it's been like once every 2 months lately, just to get the alone time together, the adult time together, you know, where we can talk to each other without getting interrupted or whatever about whatever topics. You know, so you have to date your wife. She has to be, you know, you can't just expect, you know, hey, give me your 2 minute duty sex right now and you know, it wasn't good for you. Well, too bad. You know, you gotta work on it a little bit and every day, you know?
Yeah. I think that's amazing that you guys still do that because it doesn't end after you say I do. It starts, you know, that's when it really starts. It's like getting a black belt, in whatever art you train in. Okay. Now it's your first day.
Yeah, that's what they say. That's how they consider it too.
Yeah.
Just still always learning. And look, we're always connecting. We're learning stuff about each other every day still. The way I see it is we choose to be together every single day. Like you said, the I do, I don't think the I do means that I don't have to earn her and she doesn't have to earn me every day. And you know, and we work on that. So.
Yeah. To get the marriage you want, you simply must develop greater self-respect. You will then have earned the respect you want from your wife and incorrectly believe you are entitled to by virtue of mumbling a few words during a marriage ceremony. I think I read that right. Did I read that right? Or did you write that funny? Let me see.
I might have. I don't know.
You will then have earned the respect you want from your wife.
I don't have it in front of me, so I can't tell you.
To get the marriage you want, you simply must develop greater self-respect. And go.
I mean, we just talked about that, right? I mean, that's just what we talked about. Because the first one was about respect from her, and now this is about respect for yourself.
I know what I'm doing, Chris. Yeah.
All right. All we're going to talk about is marriage and sex, it looks like.
Well, I mean, that's what you're about, man. You're the marriage sex guy, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
That's book number two.
I've been with the same girl for 25 years, so
I don't know how
I became the sex guy, but
something works.
When you look at yourself in the mirror, you have to be proud of yourself. You have to be like what you look at. And how can you expect your wife or anyone else to like what they look at if you don't even do that? There's a certain confidence that comes from dressing well, from being physically fit, from being confident in yourself and being able to talk to people, to shake their hands firmly. All that is what you put out to the world. And your wife knows you better than anybody else. And she knows if you don't have respect for yourself and if you do things that, you know, I use the drinking example a lot. I don't drink personally. When we go on vacation, maybe a couple. And I don't have a problem with drinking, but I have a problem with people when guys drink every single day, or they go out and their wife has to drive home because they get too shit-faced drunk to be able to drive. To me, that's not, there's no self-respect there. And you know, and your wife not doesn't respect that at all. If you get sloppy, you know, where you're passed out and she, you know, and she's talking to other guys because you're fucking passed out on the couch. So, you know, which I've seen before. Okay, right. Guys passed out while their wives are talking to their friends and other guys and basically laughing at the husband sitting on the couch, laying on the couch. So, you know, just have some respect for yourself and, you know, act like a man.
Yeah, you're not supposed to be her other kid.
No, well, that happens a lot.
It does happen a lot.
That's a whole nother story.
Right.
Yeah, she doesn't respect you if she has to be mommy to you, okay?
Correct.
That's
absolutely. Absolutely. We ultimately have the freedom to decide whether we will permit situations we are in or people we deal with to become a personal hell or not. We have the freedom to determine whether we will allow other people to define us or if we will use our freedom here on earth to define ourselves, despite opposition and derision that is sure to come.
Yeah, so that's quoting, that's the piece about Sartre, or however you pronounce his name, Hell is Other People, from the play. Whatever the place, I forgot it. So if you allow other people who don't share your values to speak into your life and to control how you react and how you act, that's a form of hell, okay? I spent a long time in my life seeking the validation and approval of other people, whether it's coworkers, bosses, you name it. I needed them to say or to indicate to me that I'm okay, that I'm good. So I would change my behaviors and, you know, not speak up at times when I felt like, you know, they wouldn't approve of what I say or, you know, so that's a form of hell and you can't allow that to happen. Now, with that said, if you find people who share your values, like my brothers in the Fraternity of Excellence, look, if they tell me, Chris, you're acting like an asshole, you're fucking up somehow, I'm going to take that into consideration and I'm going to, you know, I value those opinions because I know that they share my values and they have my best interests at heart. But for the world at large who doesn't share my values, most likely, I can't let them, you know, what they think of me affect me in any way. So it's really about choosing and vetting who you allow to speak into your life better. And I have two really good friends. So
I have two male friends who are my best friends in the world, who know everything about me, and I know everything about them, who I know at any point I can reach out to them about anything. They've told me you're acting like an asshole before, straight up. And it took me a while to hear it and to listen and to understand it, but they were right. You know, and I value those opinions. But if some random person was doing the same thing, you know, I they don't know me and I don't care.
So. You hear that, Stephen King? So, this is, I'll save the best for last.
Sure. Oh, man.
And this is important. This is very important, especially for males. Our ego is always present and always protecting its turf, which is our own perceived self-worth. If we question our own importance, abilities, and intelligence, we question our very core. Thus, we will cling to our opinions and fight to the death to preserve the identities we have constructed for ourselves. We begin to identify with our beliefs about the world and about ourselves. These beliefs become us. But have they really served us well, or do they inhibit our growth?
So I used to give a speech at the gym whenever we had a new. We used to just run these six-week challenges where people would come in. I would coach a lot of those classes because I liked them with the beginners. So at the end of it, when it was over and they were starting regular classes, I would give a speech and tell them to keep beginner's mind. The term beginner's mind comes from a Zen monk. I forget his name, but. And all that means is that to keep an open mind and to experience everything as if it's new, as opposed to being an expert at something. Because when you're an expert at something, you're not going to listen to what anybody else says because you're the expert and you know, you're setting your opinions.
Yeah.
So when our egos tell us we're an expert at something, or this is the only way to live, or this is the only way to look at something, we're closed off to anything and we're rigid. And I don't think that's helpful. So I try to live my own life with beginner's mind as much as possible. Even if I think I'm an expert at something, I want to learn. And people could talk about Twitter. You know, people who aren't on Twitter or don't curate their who they follow well enough, they think it's a shit show. And it is in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But if you curate who you follow, I get so much value out of it from the people that I follow because I keep that open mind. And I want to hear other opinions. And I change my opinions all the time about things, you know, which in politics people don't like to do. It's never easy to admit that you're wrong. But you have to realize it's not all about you. The world doesn't care about you. Very few people care about you. You know, just go out and try to make the best of it. Try to be a light to other people and make the world better for other people. Try to share whatever you can with them that'll make their lives better. And just keep an open mind. Just, you know, be willing to change. If you have to change on a dime, you know, you're not always right.
Yeah. One of my closest friends, I'll probably get kicked out of FOE once this gets out. One of my closest friends is a liberal feminist.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah. It's the craziest thing. And, you know, we get along great. She gives me advice about stuff. I actually feel that they say, don't ever take dating advice from women. If you're not attracted to the woman, in that way, I mean, she's attractive, but if you're not attracted to the woman in that way, and she's not attracted to you, and neither of you are invested in the other, then you can, it's like being friends with a dude, same thing. I guess that makes it for her, like being friends with a chick. I don't know, but, it's as far as the whole ego thing goes, and I like what you talked about there, because I've vet a lot of people. I don't argue. I block them. I don't care. I don't have time to argue with someone who has 7 followers and is talking shit. I did a tweet something today. I was making a joke. I said, I'm going to start you might have seen it. I said, I'm going to start the white pill movement, you know, privileged and proud. And I said, I'm also going to call it the trigger pill because it's going to piss off way more people than the red pill did. And it's a joke, man. It was a freaking joke. And somebody got up there and said, doesn't bother me. And I'm black. He said, the white privilege you guys have and that people pretend doesn't exist is what drives me. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, get a better fucking drive. Because if a media driven perpetuated narrative is what drives you to be better, you're not going to make it very far. You gotta better yourself. You gotta find some reason to better yourself. You got to find out why you suck and not suck anymore. And it's not because of me. That's right. What I try to tell people, like all these women that come to me at the gym, they're like, I wish I had your problem. You wish you had depression, anxiety, IBS, and rheumatoid arthritis? Is that really what you wish you have?
Yeah.
But you can't get through to them because they think that they're fat because I'm skinny.
Yeah, they don't see that. They don't see the struggles that other people have. They just see the image of you and you're not fat and you work at a gym and, you know, and to them there's no issues that you have no problems. But it's right. Oh, that's not true. It's funny. Can I just go back to something? So your female friend you were talking about. Mm-hmm. So my best tweet that I ever did in terms of engagement and numbers was the one where I said, my wife doesn't have any male friends. Cause if she did, I would know only what I would.
You got shit on for that, buddy.
So, and yeah, some people were angry. I mean, I mostly was positive, but there were some angry women.
Oh God, man.
And they said, do you live by the same rules? And my answer was yes. Like I get 280 characters, so I couldn't say everything. Right. But yeah, look, I think it's disrespectful. It would be disrespectful for me if I'm texting with the woman who's not my wife at 12:30 at night, you know, or if I'm going out to lunch with a random girl, you know. Mm-hmm. So I expect the same from her as from me because I just think that's the right way to live. I don't think that now. People are like, well, what if I was best friends with the person from when we were kids? Yeah, all right, that's different. You know, like I can't capture every single situation in 280 characters. No. But generally, if there's a new guy who from work or something, or from a parent at the school who wants to be friends with her all of a sudden, I know what he wants. I don't talk to him much. Yeah. There's an issue there. Yeah. And I would never do the same, you know, I would never be the same way. I don't need to be friends with a female. If I need to get a female opinion about something, I have one who will give me an opinion about it. You know, she's... Right. She's there for me. But yeah, I got a lot of shit for that, but whatever.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy is I'm willing to bet you the majority, if not all of the women that attacked you on that, think it's okay for them to have male friends, but you not have female friends. I'm willing to bet you dollars to donuts.
Yeah, maybe. I blocked a bunch of people after that because, again, if you're giving me something that's not useful, if you just want to argue with me and not – I'll go back and forth. I'll engage if you're respectful, right?
Yeah.
But if you're disrespectful, like this is, it's like coming into my house and being disrespectful. It's my page, you know. You're gone.
Yeah, you can't reason with someone who's having a temper tantrum. You cannot. If somebody who's triggered, because being triggered is different than being miffed about something. These people just get straight up triggered because anything you say now makes you a tyrannical patriarch. And what they don't realize. If you haven't forced your wife to do anything, she's a grown-ass woman. She can make her own decisions. And somehow, I don't understand where a lot of people think that we have all this power because we don't. It has to be a mutual decision. Unless he's beating the shit out of her, that's a different story.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. That's that ego. And that's why I say the best for last. You know, that's because it's something I wanted to talk about. But that's that ego, man.
Yeah,
it's detrimental.
If you're going to call me a patriarch, she's the matriarch. So I don't know how that turned out because that's the way I see it.
Right.
And I see that we're going to have generations after us and I'm the patriarch and she's the matriarch and that's all good. So I don't think that puts her in a negative position anyway.
Right. Well, before we wrap up, I want to get to the other favorite part. Since we're going to be training leagues of patriarchs here. What are your 5 tips for men going forward?
Sure. So I wrote some down. My first, these aren't in any order. So have male friends. Develop male friendship. It is so freaking important to develop male friendship. Guys who will not bullshit with you and will tell you the truth, okay? Who are not afraid and you have enough respect for them that you will listen. I did not have a group of male friends for a long time. After my daughter was born, I lost my high school friends that I grew up with because they were busy doing their own shit. So until I opened the gym, really, I didn't have that. And now I have, like I said, 2 great friends who will do that. And they bring so much value into my life because, again, I can talk to them about anything and they're not going to bullshit me. If they think I'm fucking up somehow or not acting right, they're going to tell me, and it's the same is true, vice versa. So try, I don't know how, I don't know how to make friends. I mean, that's not my area of expertise, but, you know, even if, join a group like FOE, and there's other ones out there if that's not for you. You might not be in person with those people, but you know you can trust them, and you know that they have your best interest in mind. But you got to meet other men. I mean, that's just so important. Second one is you have to make sure that you have a sense of self that's independent of anyone else. And I'll explain what that means. You're more than a husband. You're more than a father. Your whole identity cannot be based on your status as a husband or a father. You have to be your own person and figure out who you are. This is a problem, an issue, an area where I didn't do at the beginning. When I was young, it took me a long time to be able to do that. I defined myself by my family, and there was no me there besides that. And until I was able to figure out who I am, there's a lot of confusion in life, and you know, so you have to develop who you are, however you do that. So I think you mentioned something similar before. You have to learn how to say no, which just means you have boundaries and you have to enforce them rigidly. My default answer right now is no. If you ask me to do something, my default is usually going to be no. If you ask me to go out to lunch and we haven't spoken in 6 months, it's probably no, because I have more important things I'm doing. So you have to learn how to say no and not be afraid to do it and not feel bad about it. But, you know, default answer is no. And you could be convinced to make it yes if there's value in it for you.
Yeah.
How many is that? Is that three?
That was three. Yeah, that was three.
Okay. Live a balanced life. Yeah.
If you got more, you can go ahead.
Yeah. All right, I have six. More than five? I wrote down six, but
Perfect.
Live a balanced life between your mind and your body. If somebody sees me on the street, they might say, look at that meathead, right? I could probably more well-read than they are. I had a 3.7 GPA in law school. You know, I'm not a dumbass. You know, like, you have to read. You have to learn new things constantly. Work out, do your thing, but you have to have a balance between the two. And I wrote a piece on that, about how important that is. So don't just get too far, because if you're just the mind guy and you're just always reading, you're the nerdy guy, that's not good. And if you're just the meathead, that's not good either. You want to be a little bit of both. The Renaissance man, think of that, who has physical strength and mental fortitude. So, all right, this one's got like three in one. So first is be real. I'm not going to say the word authentic because I hate that term right now, authenticity, because it's just, I think it's overplayed and overused. So I'll use real. So be real, say what you mean and do what you say you'll do. I'll expand. Don't bullshit around with people. Speak your mind. Don't be afraid of what other people's reactions are going to be. Say what's on your mind and don't be afraid of it. They call it subtweeting on Twitter, I think, where you're talking about somebody, yeah, but not mentioning them. Like, don't be a bitch like that. Like, yeah. You know, just say what you mean. And always keep your word. If you say you're going to do something, don't flake out. Do it, you know, because people will respect you for that. The last one is like a big one for me. It's be on time always. There's nothing I hate worse than when somebody's not on time. If they say they're going to be somewhere and then they don't reach out and tell me, because then you're wasting my time and you're showing zero respect for my time. And I think I tweeted about this earlier, actually. You know, time is the only thing that's finite. Like, if you waste an hour, that's an hour I'm not getting back. And that just shows a major disrespect for me if you're not on time somewhere. So it's always – that's the biggest – if my wife and I argue, that's usually what we're going to argue about, because, we got to be there and soon, like, get ready. And then she'll yell at me, I got two kids to get ready, plus myself. You got yourself ready, because for some reason I just get really anxious when I feel like I'm not going to be on time because, again, I feel like I'm wasting somebody else's time, and I don't want to do that. I'm going to do that to me. So I think those are my six those are the ones that I have.
That's probably one of the best lists ever, actually.
Thank you.
A lot of that is being accountable, and to wrap it up is to be accountable as a man, be accountable, because people depend on you. And I hate to say this, but people expect women to be late. So I think that's where fashionably late came from. It takes them forever to get ready and you're still 15 fucking minutes late. Like, why? But you look so damn good. I just can't get mad at you, So
now what I do is if I really want to leave at 10:30,
I'll tell her a different time, and just so I know we're going to be leaving at 10:30.
Right.
I'll tell her 9:30.
Yeah.
And I know she's never going to be ready at that time, but she might be ready by 10:30.
Right. Exactly.
And I know she's going to listen to this, but hi, honey, that's what I do.
That's okay. I mean, you guys have a great thing going on. I'm happy for both. I'm happy for all of you, the kids too. So, where can everyone find you? Social media and your blog.
Sure. So the blog is thestrongmail.com. Sign up for my email list on there, because I send some cool stuff out on email, stuff I won't say on the blog.
Yeah.
My Twitter is my name. So it's at Chris, C-H-R-I-S, underscore DeCicco, D-E-C-I-C-C-O. It's the same on Instagram, but I don't post as much on Instagram. It's really Twitter now.
Yeah.
Look, I try to write a lot. I try to put as much as possible on the blog. Again, I go through manic times where, like, all of a sudden I have an idea and I'm 20 minutes, I write it all up, and, 45 minutes later, it's already up on the blog. So there might be spelling errors or whatever that I'll fix later on.
Yeah.
Because I don't edit very much.
Yeah. I told Nathan the other day, I said, look, man, I said, I suck at proofreading my own stuff. I used to be a proofreader for a major mailing firm. So that's what I did. And I catch it, and it just irks me. I don't look down on people about it. It's just something that that's why they hired me, because I was so good at catching typos and errors and placing, because we had to do like the ad, the coupon stuff you get in the mail. Yeah. That's what I was in charge of. So I had to make sure all that was together. I told Nathan, I was like, dude, you got to start just running these things by me, man. I'll be more than happy to clean them up. I won't change anybody's words. Just let me proofread this shit so people take us seriously. So if you ever want me to do that, just go away. I don't mind.
My friend Gil, one of my best friends, one of the pieces I did for Nathan, there was a typo in it. Okay. So I sent it to him, because I send my friends when I write stuff so they can read them. And he just screenshotted it really big and circled it and sent it back. So I texted Nathan, can you just change this, please? Just fix this one small little stupid typo.
Yeah,
it happens. But, worse is when it happens on Twitter where you can't edit.
Right, exactly. I know you got to delete, you got to do control, you got to copy. And a guy called me out the other day. I put no one, and I put K-N-O-W. Who the fuck does that? And he put the asterisk and put no one. I said, I'm going to crawl this guy. I said, I'm going to be nice. I'm just going to be nice. I sent him a message, and I said, thank you for the catch. He said, anytime, man, thank you for great content. And I said, thank God. And he jumped down his throat about it. He was not trying to be condescending at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like I said, I cannot proofread my own shit, man.
Yeah, it's hard.
I just can't. That's why I'm going to have an editor if I ever put it. Because Nathan told me, he said, you need to write the book. Go ahead and write the book now. Go ahead and write the book. Because the Primal Fire podcast would not be existing if it wasn't for Nathan. Because it was actually CJ. CJ runs Barbaric Soap.
Yeah.
So CJ hit me up before I knew it was CJ. So CJ hit me up and he's like, hey man, we like your content. Do you want to write a blog post? I'm like, you're in Rhode Island. Yeah. I'll say yes to anything. I'm going to need a secretary soon, because I say yes to everything. And I'm like, yeah, sure. So I wrote it and he loved it. He said, I'm looking forward to the next one. I said, well, shit, I got to write another one. I wrote it. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to start a podcast. And I posted about it. I said, hey man, you guys, if I did a podcast, who would listen? And it blew up. And it blew up. A week later, I've got a podcast. So that's another thing. It wouldn't have been possible if it wasn't for guys like you and Nathan, the fraternity, because I've been following Hunter for a long time too, And it's just like the first one you said, you got to find a group of men who are going to help you, man, because I'm telling you right now, women are not going to help you. And this goes for women too. Men are probably not going to help you. I can't speak on that. But if you don't have a tribe, man, you're just not going to get very far.
Yeah, so Nathan, I credit so much with everything I'm doing right now, because, again, he asked me to write for his blog, and I did, and he said, this is great, and he's the one that pushed me and said, do your own, do it, fine, because I had it in my mind for the longest time I wanted to do it. I just, WordPress, I don't know how to use WordPress. So one of the guys in the fraternity helped me with that, so got the site up, but Nathan helped me with, like, tell me who to have a graphic designer. And he's given, even yesterday, 2 days ago, he sent me a message saying, your title sucks.
you know, for SEO purposes, it's got to be better. You know, nobody's going to find your work, so make sure you do better. Yeah. You know, stuff like that is really helpful, you know, because I don't think about titles. I hate doing titles anyway, but you have to think about it. Like, you want your shit to be found, so there's SEO that you have to make sure it gets done the right way. And so he's just been like a mentor, you know, I hate using that word, but in a lot of ways on this stuff, like really pushing me to you know, to start writing and doing it. And you know, appreciate that a lot. So
yes, I refer to him as Uncle Nathan. And just like on the call the other night, he was like, okay, so you guys gotta talk, because if you expect me to do all the talking, we're gonna be bored to death.
That's a great voice right there.
Right. He's gonna kill me for that. I'm really glad you came on today, man. Keep putting out great content, because you churn out a lot of good stuff. And just like you said, it's thestrongmail.com. Go up there, read his writings, follow him on Twitter, follow him on Instagram if you want to. Find a tribe and get your shit together, guys. Because you follow guys like Chris, they're going to help you get your shit together. All right. So hopefully we can do this again at some point, because I look forward to you putting that book out. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you on the spot. Now you have to write the book, because I have to have you back on the podcast to talk about the book.
My goal is to have it done. Where are we, in March right now? The first draft will be done in a few weeks. So, I mean, I'm writing about 1,500 words every time I sit down to do it. So, I'm excited about it. You know, I'm going to try to make it work. I think I have some good stories from those rave days, like I said. So a lot of it's like gets into some of the funny stories in there. So, you know,
definitely. Well, I'm looking forward to reading it, man. And, when you get it done, we're going to get up here and talk about it, and we'll have a whole bunch of awesome, cool stories to talk about. So, So Chris, it was good to talk to you, man. And I will talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care, brother.
Take care.